Of soccer in the UK, where the game is known as football, David Goldblatt has written, "Like much of British life, the new football economy is unfair but functional, wincingly unequal but never boring." In his new book, The Game of Our Lives, the author examines, among other things, various ways in which developments in the sport of football reflect changes beyond the pitch. David Goldblatt, welcome to Only a Game.
Thanks for having me.
You write that just 25 years ago, the Sunday Times of London characterized football as a slum game played by slum people in slum stadiums. Tell us how things have changed in what you call the new football economy.
Well, the football economy has changed out of all recognition. The English Premier League is now the richest soccer league in the world, turning over something in the region of $3.5 billion a year and rising fast. The one thing that hasn't changed, and I think is really important to recognise, is that it still doesn't make any money. Overall, the Premier League, when you take taxes and capital into account, has never made a single cent in profit. It is the most irrational, ineffective, hapless business model, perhaps in the entire world of sport. And let's face it, it's got a few competitors out there.
I was going to say, there are plenty. One of the characteristics of football in England has been crowd chanting, and some of the chants have been creative and funny, although some of them perhaps not fit for broadcast. I am partial to Who Ate All the Pies and Can't We Play You Every Week, but am I right to conclude that the most common chant these days is Where's the Money Gone?
Well, if only, that would suggest a kind of sophisticated sort of critical attitude on the part of fans. Interesting one that you hear, if I can use this term on the radio, crap club, no history. And I was indeed at Chelsea a few weeks ago, and the Arsenal fans were taunting them by saying, crap club, no history. And I thought, isn't that extraordinary? Not whether you've won trophies or not. Have you got glory? Have you got history? That, for me, that deep-rooted sense that there is some way of connecting ourselves romantically, emotionally, and psychologically to, I would say, the lost world of industrial working-class England within which football was forged, is very present in the stadiums.
You maintain that in England, which you characterize as among the most secular of societies, football fills people's need for collective energies, identities, and shared meanings. Give us some specific examples of the game or a team that serves that function.
You know, local government and local identities are incredibly weak. We have nothing of the equivalent of, say, state identities that you have in the United States. And so football clubs have become increasingly one of the main ways in which these urban identities of places otherwise off the map are retained. I mean, take somewhere like Blackburn Rovers. They actually won the Premiership back in 1995. Blackburn, once upon a time in, you know, the Victorian industrial era, was a place that everybody in England would have known of. It was a centre of engineering. It was a centre of cotton production. It was a place of wealth and modernity. And these days, much of the north of England, you know, has disappeared off the economic and demographic map for the rest of the country. And football is one of those places that allows people in Blackburn to actually re-experience the sense of local identity. And one lovely act, how determined people can be to hold on to those identities, is the protests that were conducted over the last couple of years at Blackburn Rovers, which was taken over by an Indian dodgy chicken conglomerate called Venkis. And in protest at the insanity of their decision-making, they let live chickens loose on the pitch during the game.
English football has become less English over the years. Lots of the owners aren't English. Lots of the players aren't either. And likewise, the coaches. What sort of impact has that had on fans?
Well, I think at one level, you know, when it began, it was like Christmas and your birthday and Thanksgiving all rolled into one. You know, Fabrizio Ravanelli shows up at Middlesbrough. People couldn't believe it. This was a gift, wasn't it? But I think we've become rather used to and blasé about the presence of foreigners. And now many people are saying, what impact is this having on the careers, the talent and the technique of the best of English players and therefore the English national team as well? And I think the same can be said of the issue of ownership. Personally, it's not simply an objection to foreign owners, because we have private owners of our own who are just as incompetent, stupid and disrespectful of tradition and fans. It seems to me it is madness that institutions, old Victorian working class social enterprises like football clubs, their cultural capital has been produced and preserved by generations of fans, not by owners of any kind. And the idea that that could be privatised and sold off seems to me a profound mistake and a deeply moral problem.
You see similarities in what you term the misgovernance of football with the misgovernance of the United Kingdom in general. That seems a stretch.
Let's take the example of the banking industry. Here are two organizations that have managed to benefit enormously from globalization, sequestered the gains from it amongst a tiny minority that are permanently, even structurally in debt, are persistently found to be breaking and bending the rules. And never, ever, ever does anybody actually get nailed and go to prison. Indeed, the organizations that regulate these two industries, banking and football, are stuffed with precisely the people who should be regulated. I mean, the Premier League has two seats on the FA board. So what do you know? You put vested interests in to regulate vested interests. What do you get out? Self-serving activities and corruption. I think there's a very, very close parallel indeed.
I surrender. It's not a stretch at all. David Goldblatt is the author of The Game of Our Lives, The English Premier League, and The Making of Modern Britain. David, thank you very much for speaking with me.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
To find out what I really think of this book and the others we speak about on the program, please visit our website, onlyagame.org.